Hi. All of us on the planet can agree that oxygen is key to life. But for some reason or reasons, ozone in the public eye, for the most part, is still kind of a mystery. Enter Mark Seifer, world-class researcher, lecturer, and author. His expertise on Nikola Tesla surprisingly had him take a U-turn into researching medical ozone. His book is Ozone Therapy for the Treatment of Viruses, The Science and Promise of Healing with Ozone. The man has done his homework. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Thanks for joining us. Okay, Mark, let's do this. Some of my long-term listeners do know about ozone due to some of my previous shows, but I haven't had a guest speaking about it for quite some time. And now you've written this very informative and timely book entitled Ozone Therapy for the Treatment of Viruses. What was your introduction into the world of medical ozone?
It's a crazy story. I have to go back to 1984. I was speaking at a Tesla conference right where you are in Colorado Springs, well, down the block from you anyway. And there was another fellow there, he was a medical doctor, talking about ozone therapy. And I wondered why he was at a Tesla conference. And the reason was because in 1896, Tesla invented and patented an ozone generator and then sold them to the medical community. So this doctor, his name was Dr. Freebot, said that he was treating a man dying of cancer. His body was riddled with tumors. And he gave him ozone therapy, and the tumors were shed. And I wondered about it, so I did a bit of research, and I found an article in Science from 1980, which confirmed that ozone has been used to treat cancer, that it thwarts the development of tumorous cancers. So I stuck it in my book, Wizard, the Life and Times of Nikola Tesla, which was in 1996. And that's it. So that's, 25 years ago. And that was it, the end of the story. And then COVID reared its ugly head. And I said, maybe I should Google this guy Freebot and see what happened. So I Googled him, and out popped a book called The Story of Ozone by Saul Pressman, written with 12 medical doctors, including Deepak Chopra and Frank Schallenberger, a well-known ozone therapist. I'm saying, wow, this is a 1995 book. A lot of medical doctors interested in this. What's all this all about? So I did a bit more research, and I found that ozone kills viruses. So I then contacted several ozone therapists, Dr. Howard Robbins in particular in New York City, and Dr. Robert Rowan in Santa Clara, California. And they confirmed that they were successfully, treating people that had COVID. And they told me this unbelievable story that in 2014, they went to West Africa to the Ebola pandemic to train medical personnel ozone therapy as a way to kill the Ebola virus. And I'm thinking, we're all wearing these gloves and wearing a mask, we're afraid to see our friends, and COVID's a scary thing. And Ebola is 30 times more dangerous. So, why would these two medical doctors go all the way to West Africa and risk their lives? And the reason was they knew that ozone therapy will kill viruses. That's really how I got interested in it. And they were successful in teaching the medical personnel there in Sierra Leone. They even treated the president of the country. But the World Health Organization kind of shut them down. And secretly, five medical people who got Ebola got ozone therapy, and they survived. And those medical doctors who got Ebola, who were not able to get ozone therapy, died horrible deaths. So that's kind of what was happening for me. And that's why I really got interested and wanted to write a book to really explore this field a lot further.
Yes, and it is interesting you mentioned the president that was treated, and there's a wonderful man, Dr. Niepers, who's a German doctor. He's since passed, but our high political figures end up going to Europe to get treated for various things. And one time he goes, well, I'm not allowed to speak about my clients due to client-doctor confidentiality, but your president certainly is a wonderful man, really. So there's a lot of discrepancy that goes on around the world, for sure. And you have written with doctors quoted and articles in your book, and it very definitely has quite a bit of scientific backup and research, including the fact that our immune system, a healthy one, is a complete set of defenses designed for our existence in a hostile world. Can you speak to this from where ozone fits in the picture, and start at any level you like, and we'll see where our conversation goes today?
Yes, I needed to study the immune system. And one of the articles I found was by Dr. Paul Wentworth. He's not a medical doctor, he's a chemist from Scripps Institute. But he worked with a medical doctor, Richard Lerner, at Scripps. And what Wentworth discovered, and this is in 2001, is that our own antibodies manufacture ozone for the express purpose of killing bacteria, microbes, and viruses. So I then got a couple of books on the immune system and really got into the heart and soul of it. And what I recognized in all of these textbooks that I was studying, not a single one mentions ozone, and not a single one tells you how the antibodies kill the virus. Now, I'm all for vaccines. I'm not against vaccines at all. In fact, I've studied how they work. But if you read, there are thousands of articles right now on the COVID virus. Find a single one which explains how the vaccines or how the antibodies actually kill the virus. You know, of course, the vaccines don't kill anything. What they do is they take a piece of the spike, not the actual virus, but the spike. The spike is used to latch onto the lungs, and so that the virus can then enter the lungs and replicate. So if the virus is unable to get into the lungs, then it'll die. So they take a piece of the spike and they make it impotent, and they inject you with a tiny piece of this impotent piece of the spike. Then you build an antibody that will recognize the actual COVID virus when you get it. And then they say, and now you'll be safe. Now you'll be protected. But they don't tell you what happens next. How do the antibodies kill the spike or kill the virus? And the way they do it is they manufacture hydrogen peroxide and they manufacture ozone. And what I found was an article in Harvard Medical School that they were dealing with zebrafish. They would wound a zebrafish, and the zebrafish would produce hydrogen peroxide, which is H2O2. It's almost like water, which is H2O. And the zebrafish then produced this hydrogen peroxide, which travels to the wound and disinfects the wound. But they then removed the gene that gives the zebrafish this ability, and the zebrafish can no longer produce hydrogen peroxide. So I think that we must also have a gene inside our bodies which manufactures ozone. And so what my book does, which almost no article out of the thousands and thousands of articles and textbooks on the immune system tell you, is how the specific chemistry of how the antibodies kill the virus. And the way they do it, they manufacture various disinfectants. One of them is ozone, another is hydrogen peroxide. So that's some of the chemistry behind it, and that's some of the things that I learned in studying the immune system.
As pharmaceuticals offer their defense to kill virus and bacteria, these bacteria and virus mutate to avoid death. So one antibiotic may not work for very long, and we all know that more and more we have to use stronger and stronger antibiotics if we choose to go that route. And ozone, O3, oxidizes them and kills them. And can you speak to the difference and how this applies not only medically, but for industrial uses as well? What is that oxidizing process?
Yeah, I read an article by Dr. Gerard Sonnen. I asked to publish his article in our book, and he graciously agreed. And what he pointed out was that the virus has what's known as a lipid envelope. That's its Achilles heel. That's its outer skin. The outer skin can be oxidized or penetrated by ozone. The difference between a virus and an animal An animal has the ability for self-repair. If you cut your arm or your leg or whatever, scrape your knee, it'll heal. But if a virus gets the skin scraped or cut, it'll die. It cannot self-repair. So by injecting O3 ozone and oxygen, O2, into the bloodstream, it'll travel to the virus and it'll oxidize or penetrate the outer lipid envelope, the outer skin, and it'll kill it. So the problem with the vaccines are, you know, we have a vaccine and there's the Omicron variant, the D variant, and all these other variants of COVID. And the vaccines are very specific designs for each one of those. But they all have the same lipid envelope. They all have an outer skin. Ozone therapy will kill all mutations. It will also kill the flu. Someone is dying of COVID. There's no point giving them a vaccine. But in the ICUs, we could treat people with ozone therapy. But the big problem is the FDA has come out against it. The World Health Organization has come out against it. And so it's very hard for ozone therapists to go into the ICUs. We tried to get the two medical doctors I mentioned, Howard Robbins in New York and Robert Rowan in California, to go into the ICUs. They wouldn't let them. And oh, you mentioned one other thing, the superbugs. These are bacteria. There was a man dying in Texas, and his wife called from the hospital, Dr. Rowan in California, and said, can you fly out here? My husband is dying of this superbug, and I'd like to give him ozone therapy, and we will waive all rights, et cetera, et cetera. The hospital would not let him come. Robin, can I say one more thing about this?
Yes.
In doing all this research, I wondered if ozone therapy was so good, why isn't it being accepted? So I Googled ozone therapy, and out popped an FDA federal regulation. It's called Title 21. And the Title 21 says, ozone is a toxic gas with no medical application. Well, if ozone is a toxic gas with no medical application, then Paul Wentworth, who discovered that our own antibodies manufacture ozone from Scripps Institute, has to be wrong. So it's either Paul Wentworth is right or the FDA is right. And then when you get into it and you see all the different people, and there are a few clinical studies that have shown that ozone therapy has been killing the COVID virus, you find that this Title 21 is in error. So I did some research on Title 21, and I found it stemmed from an article from the 1920s where these two scientists created ozone therapy. They created ozone, and they found it to be a toxic gas. 20 years went by, and another scientist replicated their work and said, the problem with your study was that you took it from the ambient air. You created ozone from the air, which is 80% nitrogen and 20% oxygen. So what you created was nitrous oxide, which indeed is a
yes.
toxic gas. If you redo your experiment just using pure oxygen, tell me if you will find pure ozone that is not dangerous. So they replicated it, and the very guy, one of the very guys from 1920 who wrote the first article, replicated. He says, you're right, I made a mistake. We should not have made ozone out of air, which is 80% nitrogen. We should make it out of pure oxygen, which is what the medical doctors do. So the federal regulation, Title 21, is based on a 1920 article that has been disproved by one of the guys who wrote the actual article. And I am asking congressmen to look into this. Again, Paul Wentworth discovered that our own antibodies manufacture ozone. So if our own immune system is creating ozone, how could it possibly be a toxic gas with no medical application? I think Title 21 played a huge role in augmenting this pandemic because they banned, basically, a very treatment that would have helped kill the virus right off the bat.
Yes. You were just speaking about the medical, which is very interesting because when we switch over to the industrial side, they're using ozone all over the place. From the Las Vegas casinos are cleaning their rooms out because they have smoking there and they use ozone to clean their rooms out. I know apartment building owners that use ozone to clean out the smells. And the Olympians from Europe who came over in 1980 to L.A., they said, you don't use chlorine in your pools, do you? And they go, well, yes, we do. And so the European swimmers said, well, we're not coming. So L.A. switched over their swimming pools that they used for the Olympics to be cleaned by ozone. And actually, L.A. was one of the first cities in the U.S., I believe, to use ozone in their water treatment plants.
Yes, this is all really interesting. What I found was so fascinating about this, you mentioned chlorine. Let's say you want to clean a room that's been infected. If you clean it with chlorine, then you have to clean off the chlorine. Ozone, it's an unstable form of oxygen. It's O3 instead of O2. So if you clean the room with O3, it will degrade into O2, normal oxygen. So there's nothing to clean afterwards. So ozone's a perfect disinfectant because it becomes regular oxygen after about 20 or 30 minutes. The other thing about it is, you know, they say, you know, they talk about the ozone layer with smog. The reason why ozone is attached to smog, it's actually trying to kill the smog. It's trying to help us.
Right. It's quite a misnomer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a real misnomer. One of the things I learned was about the ozone layer, how it's created. I think this is so incredibly fascinating. You have to go all the way back to the beginning of life, which is a couple of billion years ago, the first plant life. And photosynthesis takes place. So sunlight goes into the plants, and the plants change the sunlight into oxygen, which then floats into the atmosphere. So the atmosphere, the early Earth, starts to get more and more oxygen. Now the cosmic rays from the sun come down, and they transform O2, which is oxygen, into O3. That's what the cosmic rays do. So the O3, which is ozone, then floats up to the top of the sky, and it's a blue gas. And so I did some research. Some people think that the ozone layer is the reason why the sky is blue. Other people think it's just there's a lot of blue light in the rainbow that overpowers the other lights. But in any event, the top of the atmosphere is created every single day with this process. During sunrise, the sun hits the atmosphere, changes O2 to O3. The O3 rises to the top and creates this little tiny shell of ozone layer at the top. What amazed me is how thick the ozone layer is, which protects the planet from additional cosmic rays from hitting the Earth. It's less than an inch thick. It's just a couple of millimeters thick. Once I read this, I don't believe it. I mean, I had to read it 5 times to believe it. But it shows how fragile life is on this planet. This planet is alive, has life on it, because the ozone layer, which is 1 or 2 millimeters thick, rises up to the top and blocks the cosmic rays from the sun hitting the Earth. So this journey for me has been fascinating, and it's given me a whole different appreciation of life on the planet.
Yes, and you mentioned Tesla earlier. There was a lot of, or not a lot, but there certainly was substantiated research that went on in the 1700s, I believe. Didn't you report about that in your book?
Yes. UV light will create ozone, and electricity will create ozone. They had electrical generators even in the late 1700s, and they were producing a smell. The word ozone has to do with the odor that's created. It took about 50 years, though, to about the 1850s, before they identified it, and they got the chemistry of it, which was it was O3 instead of O2. It's 3 molecules of oxygen instead of 2 molecules of oxygen. And then Simmons, who's a well-known industrialist, who Tesla took a lot of his work from Simmons because he's an electrical engineer, was actually seeing that when he created ozone, he was killing bacteria. And then even in the 1870s, the 1880s, they were taking human blood and putting them in test tubes and treating them with ozone, and they'd be killing the microbes in there. So ozone could also be used to disinfect blood, you know, in blood transfusions and that kind of thing. So there's so many incredibly great uses for it. But when you go to the history of it, you're right. It goes all the way back to the late 1700s, and then a lot of work was done in the 1800s, the late 1800s, and the early 1900s. And they were using it, you know, to treat TB and different illnesses as well in the turn of the century, the 20th century.
Yes, and I know in Europe, Germany played a big part in that they did a lot of the established, which holds today, research after the war. They used it in their MASH units to help their guys get over infections sooner. They were doing less amputations because they were able to get rid of infection and save limbs, etc. And so I'm wondering if you would share from someone's work today, somebody perhaps in Europe, I know they were using it in hospitals during COVID, and not every hospital, but is there a doctor or scientist you'd like to share their work from this era that we're living right now?
Yes, I would say Dr. Gerard Sonnen. He's in New York City. He's very interested in exactly that topic. Gangrene, of course, is a very scary thing, but gangrene, you know, it's a bacteria, and it can be disabled through ozone. So ozone can save, as you mentioned, people's limbs. One of the studies in that book, The Story of Ozone, was done with something like 5 million treatments with almost 700 medical doctors that were ozone therapists throughout the 1950s all the way through the 1980s. There were only 4 deaths that were reported, and only 40 people complained of a negative thing. I recently had, they were testing my heart for a sonogram, and she wanted to put a dye into my body, and I said, and it was a little radioactive dye. She said, "You'll breathe it out." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Do I have to trust you?" She said, "Yeah." So she injected this little gas into my body, and they were able to see the heart work a lot easier with the radioactive dye, and I breathed out this thing. That's exactly what ozone therapy is. It's the same exact kind of technique. Ozone therapy is mostly oxygen. It's 97% pure oxygen and just 3% ozone. It's basically just injecting into the body mostly oxygen. And one of the things I learned, which, you know, but when you read it, it becomes so much more obvious to you. We can go, you know, a week or 10 or 15 days without food, but we can only go 4 or 5 minutes without oxygen. You have to have oxygen all of the time. So if someone's ill, to inject them with a lot more oxygen and a teeny bit of ozone makes perfect sense to me that it would not be dangerous and it would augment the healing process. That's a lot of the stuff that I've learned.
And it's amazing that just that 3% of the O3 makes a huge difference between doing just an oxygen treatment as opposed to an oxygen ozone treatment. And it's really hugely different as far as how it does serve the body. And it's my understanding that the advent of technology and equipment and plastic, for instance, because ozone will disintegrate rubber. So in the old days, they would keep having to change the rubber tubing because of the ozone disintegrating the rubber. But once we got hold of plastics for the parts, it was able to really help advance ozone equipment. And I know that when the early days were going on of the AIDS epidemic and people knew or caught wind that ozone was a great aid to that in healthcare, most of the machines were coming over from Germany. And now, certainly, there are other equipment companies. So I'm wondering if you would give us the overall view of what you found through all of your research as the most used protocol for administering the ozone.
Yeah, it has to be pure oxygen and the ozone machine. So you combine the pure oxygen with the ozone machine to create the ozone that you need that's injected into the body. And there are 2 ways to do it. One is called the DIV method, which is direct intravenous, where they just inject the gas directly into the bloodstream. And one of the questions was, wouldn't that cause embolisms? It does not cause embolisms. And I said, I just recently, they did the same thing. They put a gas right into my bloodstream. I didn't get an embolism. So it's well known that it does not cause embolisms. Embolisms is caused by impurities that are injected. Now, the other way is called the MAH method, where they remove the blood, then treat the blood, and then put the blood back into the body. In a crisis situation like the Ebola pandemic, you'd have all these infected bottles. You can't do it, so you had to use the DIV method. So both methods are fine and can be used.
And I would have to add the caveat that those are the methods that are used by MDs. There are a lot of people doing ozone at home with their own equipment, and they're sitting in steam sauna cabinets, which is a great way to administer ozone because it starts the flow of ozone through the blood and the lymph system and does a pretty handy-dandy job there, I have to say.
You have to tell me more about that, because I need to be educated myself.
Mark, what would you like to say in closing? What have we left out, or what haven't I been savvy enough to ask you about? Your book is wonderfully researched and has a lot of information that you've shared. So what other piece would you like to share with us today before we close?
What I'd like to say is I was very concerned. I simply wanted to help save lives. And I found a technique that is really just an enhancement of what our own immune system does. What I'd ask your listeners to do is to Google Paul Wentworth so that they know for themselves that I'm not making this up. Our own antibodies manufacture ozone. And I look at it from an evolutionary point of view. We are the product, literally, of billions of years of evolution. When you really get into it, it took a billion years for the first life form to be created. And then, you know, a couple hundred billion years later, you get the dinosaurs, and then you get mammals, etc. Our immune system has learned how to manufacture these various chemicals which keep us alive. One of them is ozone. So I thought just studying ozone therapy taught me a tremendous amount about evolution, about the planet, about the ozone layer, and also about a new way to help keep humanity safe, normally and also in crisis situations. I learned so much more and so much of a great appreciation of Mother Nature and how intelligent our body really is in keeping us safe.
Yes, and Mark, I feel like we're kindred souls in the sense that the other books that you've written are very interesting topics to me as well. You mentioned the one about Nikola Tesla, but you've written a couple about him, haven't you?
Yeah, he wrote a new book. It's called Tesla, Wizard at War. And what I like about that book is that we have this image of Nikola Tesla being this old man just disappearing from history, feeding the pigeons in Bryant Park. And what I found is that's not at all what was occurring in his life. As he even entered his 80s, he was negotiating with Joseph Stalin in Russia, General McNaughton, who was Winston Churchill's right-hand man in Great Britain. And FDR himself, we found a letter from FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, wanting to meet with Tesla because Tesla had a particle beam weapon, the death ray, which they were hoping might be able to stop the Germans. If the Germans were to build the atomic bomb before we did, would they fly it over and land, you know, drop it on New York? We might need this death ray. We might need this particle beam weapon. So that was some of the things that I learned, that Tesla was not at all this old doddering guy just feeding pigeons. He was negotiating with the highest echelons of power in the run-up to World War II and even during World War II.
Thank you to Mark Cipher. The truth is out there, folks. May we all find our own. For more information about ozone protocols and other tributaries-related information, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts can be heard where you hope to find them, and if not, please let us know. I'm still Robin Clare, thanking you for staying tuned.